What is up, basketball fans? Welcome to the NBA Outlet. I'm your host, Nick Faye. With me, as always, Corey Waldron and special guest back again, Laz Jackson. Laz, what's up? Tell the people where they can find you.
Hey, thanks for having me on, guys. I am Laz Jackson. You can find me mostly on SB Nation's Detroit Bad Boys, where I host the Detroit Bad Boys podcast. I've also got something brand new this season from Blue Wire, the Pistons versus Everybody podcast. That's something I've recently started. I'm pretty excited to be doing. And so, that's what I'm up to these days.
Bad Boys, bad. I can't honestly, I can't hear Bad Boys without hearing that song playing in my head. Laz, pleasure having you on the pod. Nick, always a pleasure, buddy.
And we are continuing our NBA Outlet preview series, diving into Detroit Pistons today. Before we get started, though, quick reminder, you can find the other shows on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, Google Play, Dash Radio, and YouTube. But before we talk about next season, let's look back at last year. 41-41, eighth seed in the Eastern Conference, swept by the Bucks in the first round. How would you summarize last season into one emoji?
So I was like scrolling through I got like an Android. And so I was scrolling through all the Android like options to figure out the best emoji to answer this question. And I think it's the like the inquisitive face, but the one with like a monocle on it. Because the Pistons were successful. They like made it to the playoffs, but you're still like looking at them like, what are you guys doing? Like what's going on?
I gave them the okay emoji for along the similar lines. You know, obviously Blake Griffin balled out, and there are some okay factors about this team going forward, but like how high is their ceiling in the last year, them being an eight seed? I kind of felt like that may be, you know, 6 to 8 may be the range they fall into with the team they had. So for me, it was just an okay emoji.
Both good picks. I kind of made a stretch here. I went with the doctor emoji for their performance team to do a better job of managing Blake Griffin throughout the season.
Yeah, we are going to get to that.
All right. On a positive note, biggest positive takeaway of last year.
So the biggest positive takeaway was that this is actually a pretty solid playoff team when healthy. The three-man trio of Reggie Jackson, Andre Drummond, and Blake Griffin had a plus 6.2 net rating when they were all on the court together. For comparison, the Embiid, Butler, Simmons trio in Philly had a plus 6.8 net rating when they were on the court together. And so, like, you know, Philadelphia is traditionally thought of as a much better team than Detroit, and they were. But at the same time, like, as long as those three guys are on the court for the Pistons, like, they're pretty solidly a playoff team in the Eastern Conference. And, like, discovering that and knowing that going into this season was pretty useful.
A positive takeaway for me was just Blake Griffin overall. I mean, his game just further has evolved, him becoming, you know, a better three-point shooter, shooting 36% last year. Averaging 24 points per game, being one of the healthier years. Obviously, he did get banged up late, and we're going to talk about how they really rode him for a majority of the season, and he even tried to will out some sort of playoff run in the first round with that giant knee brace. But Blake Griffin was astounding. I mean, he really, early on in the season, caught my eye, and for most of the year, he was absolutely tremendous to watch.
Yeah, it was almost like we kind of got to see Blake unlocked in a sense, because obviously dealing with injuries the last couple seasons, and then with the Clippers, it was always Chris Paul's team. So last year, it felt like Blake was able to take over. I think he had, a 50-point game against Philadelphia early in the year. You know, he was in the MVP conversation at certain points. So I think the way that Blake kind of played just kind of set the tone, and it gave the Pistons just kind of a star to build around, kind of what Laz said, having that trio of guys. Now moving to this season, you have something to kind of build on. But on a negative note, what's the biggest negative takeaway from last season?
That they were hopeless, basically, without Blake on offense. Even towards the end of the season, where they really they needed to win the final two games of the year to make the playoffs, and if they didn't, I think Charlotte was going to make it. They were playing against Memphis, and Memphis is like not starting any of the guys you would normally associate with Memphis, and they needed to make like this huge second half comeback because Blake was like basically playing on one leg, and they scored like 30 points in the first half. And so it's just like it was an encapsulation of like the entire season. Like, they needed to play so hard on both ends, and it was so difficult for them to score the ball without Blake Griffin that the team just really needed to either do a better job of surrounding Blake with like better talent, or like be more proactive in keeping him healthy for the rest of the season, and maybe both.
Yeah, I'm very similar to Laz on this. It was just a supporting cast around Griffin. Obviously, when Griffin went down, things got 10 times worse. The Pistons were 26 last year in team assists with 22.5. They just lack playmakers. I mean, Ish Smith is, you know, the third best playmaker behind Blake Griffin and Reggie Jackson. Not ideal. So the supporting cast was an issue.
Yeah, I think just another scoring option on the team, somebody who could go get you a bucket or play make. And you mentioned, you know, them depending on Blake so much. I remember hearing, like, certain points that, like, Dwayne Casey was, like, scared to put Blake on the bench, even when the Pistons were up 20.
Yeah, there were definitely times, like, when the season was, like, slipping away in, like, January, Blake was playing, like, 38 minutes a night. And it was, like, just in carrying an insane load usage-wise and from, like, a ball handling and shot creation perspective. And it was simply because, like, they had nobody else on the team who could really shoulder that load. Reggie Jackson wasn't fully healthy until about February, despite playing all 82 games. And so, and, you know, you're relying on guys like, you were relying on guys like Ish Smith and the less confident version of Luke Kennard. Earlier in the season to make shots for you, and you know, it had the success you would expect out of those guys.
And what, like, Wayne Ellington was like a savior for them when they made that buyout signing too, right? He was a big boost for them.
Yeah, that was actually, like, legitimately really big, especially because they, like, traded away Reggie Bullock at the deadline, who was filling, like, a lot of that same function, but, like, they traded him away, so they needed a guy to replace that.
Yeah, it was really interesting because you mentioned Luke Kennard, you know, obviously being a shooter, but then you trade Bullock, and I know he wasn't necessarily having, he was a shooter on the team. I was surprised Wayne Ellington signed with the Pistons, especially when the market, and he chose them, I think, probably just for the bigger opportunity.
Yeah, that's what I would say. And, you know, Arne Tellem is a big muckety-muck in the Pistons organization, and he's a big former agent. A lot of players have a lot of respect for him, and he has a lot of connections around the league. Derrick Rose said, you know, Arne Tellem was instrumental in getting him to come to Detroit. Wayne Ellington was referred to as a significant recruiting victory for during his signing, and so that's what we called him the rest of the year on the board. But yeah, having Arne Tellem around, this guy as an influential guy, makes a difference on the margins for a team that needs every single help, all the bit help it can get.
Yeah, especially, you know, Detroit's not like a big time free agent destination, so any type of boost with that, something definitely keep an eye on. But moving on to next year, the Pistons are coming in at number 18 in the OTG power rankings via our staff. Is this too high, too low, or fair?
Where would that put them in the East?
It makes them a playoff team. I think it puts them at either 7 or 8.
Okay, yeah, that sounds about right then.
What about you, Corey?
Yeah, it's about right to me. I think it just, I mean, they could easily be a couple spots higher. I think how they utilize Derrick Rose and, you know, how Luke Kennard takes that next step forward. Does Markieff Morris get himself back on? Well, we're going to talk about all that, but I think it's fair.
Yeah, I think it's fair.
I've only really been thinking about them in the context of the Eastern Conference. Sorry to throw you guys off, but, like, when you, like, in context of the whole league, like, I don't really even care about the West. Like, sure, they absolutely can't compete in the West. Like, luckily, that's not the case.
Hey, it works out sometimes. Yeah, I think it's fair considering the spot they're at. Like Corey mentioned, they could probably go up a couple spots, maybe drop down a couple spots, but they're right in that, you know, 8th and 7th seed range for the East. But moving on to the offseason, draft pick-wise, I'm going to try to nail this, but, you know, Laz, feel free to correct me. Sekou Doumbouya?
Doumbouya. Doumbouya.
Doumbouya.
Bingo.
Okay, sweet. I'm going to have to remember that because I feel like he's going to be a pretty good prospect, but tell us a little bit more about him.
Yeah, I'm really excited about Sekou. He's the youngest guy in the draft, wing 6'9 out of France, only 18 years old, which is, like, it's so rare for the Pistons to have this kind of prospect where he's, like, young and long and athletic and young. The Pistons don't really draft young guys. I think the only two other 18-year-olds the Pistons have ever drafted are Darko and Amir Johnson. And so, like, that is not, like, an infamous list of guys you, like, necessarily want to be on. but it just shows you, like, the Pistons don't often take these kinds of swings. Unfortunately, we didn't really get to see a lot of him at Summer League. He was injured and, you know, still transitioning from France. The Pistons play one preseason game so far last night. We saw him play for a good chunk of time last night. And he looks like an 18-year-old. He looks kind of lost, but you can definitely, like, see the athleticism and the potential is there.
Corey, any thoughts on him?
Yeah, I'm just excited about him. I know there was a lot of buzz on draft night.
And just a quick shout out to one of our draft guys, Matt Esposito, wrote a great article on him and did a nice little film breakdown. So be sure to check that out, otgbasketball.com. Jordan Boone was also selected 57th pick. Any thoughts on him, Laz?
Two-way guy. He was drafted, I think, for his willingness to sign a two-way deal. He's a really athletic point guard, probably being Grand Rapids most of the year unless something goes horribly wrong. But a really athletic guy who can get up and down the court and defend, a guy that's like really useful to have in the pipeline, but you know, not a lot of expectations on him this year.
Just a solid guy to have around.
Yeah, definitely.
Now, moving on to other offseason acquisitions, you know, trades and free agent signings, they brought in Derrick Rose, Markieff Morris, Tony Snell, Tim Frazier, Joe Johnson. What's your favorite move?
My favorite move is the Tony Snell move. Like, we talked about how big a deal Wayne Ellington was for this team, and, like, Snell is functionally just, like, a version of Wayne Ellington that's 2 inches taller for this team. And so, like, that'll be supremely useful. He shot, I believe Snell has shot 40% from three the last 3 years. He's a guy who is talented but fell out of the rotation in Milwaukee due to an injury, like, more than his individual play, I think. And so it'll be really useful to have a guy with his size and shooting ability on the wing for the Pistons. Now, I know you guys are surprised I didn't say Derrick Rose, but, you know, the Pistons had capable point guard play last year, but they really, really lacked capable wing play. Like, Wayne Ellington was really big for them. They were starting they were playing a bunch of, like, 6'4", 6'5", shooting guards, like, at small forward a bunch. And so, like, having a guy at 6'7", who can shoot and defend was just, like, that was, like, the main thing I was worried about this offseason, and getting that was huge.
Yeah, I think Tony Snell is the player that helps the most. Just fits right in, a typical, like, 4 or 5 starter, not a big ego guy. The shooting is the one thing that kind of slipped in recent years, but, I mean, a very good get. And then I'm a fan of Joe Johnson. That's more of just, like, the glamour that comes with the fact that, like, Joe Johnson is back in the NBA. I'm not sure what we can actually expect from Joe Johnson, but it was cool seeing him back. And then Derrick Rose, I mean, there was flashes last year, obviously the 50-point game. It doesn't hurt to have a player like Derrick Rose who can give you that sort of offense, and if they get some more playmaking, it couldn't hurt.
Yeah, I'm really concerned about how much the coaching staff is, like, emphasizing that they're going to play Joe Johnson. Joe Johnson's 38, and he looked it last night in the right preseason. And so we're going to see how that experiment plays out.
Yeah, I think you really can't play him, like, more than 10 minutes, but, you know, who knows. Derrick Rose is interesting. I think maybe he can give him some scoring punch, you know, when Blake's on the bench, but obviously he needs the ball to be effective. I like the Snell signing. It was a trade, actually. And, yeah. Snell, though, I think the issue with him in Milwaukee was just a confidence issue. At times, he just was scared to take shots, and maybe if Detroit can kind of boost him and infuse him with some confidence, I think that'll help get his game back to where we saw a couple years ago, where he looked like he'd be a really good wing, and where he signed, I think that contract was like 4 years, $40 million or something along those lines. But talking to Parchers, Wayne Ellington now, Ish Smith, Glenn Robinson III, John Lear, Jose Calderon, Zaza Pachulia, thoughts on these guys being out, and do you wish you were able to retain any of them?
Not particularly. No. Like, when you read that list, it's like, you know, Wayne Ellington is, like, really the only impact player out of the guys who departed. I had high hopes for Glenn Robinson III. He kind of dashed those.
Zaza, I remember that last year. Yeah. had me hyped on Glenn Robinson III after we left.
I had to eat some crow in that one. That one turned out pretty badly. He's in Golden State now, though, so, like, he's gonna get another pretty good shot, right?
Yeah.
You know, Zaza was actually, like, pretty effective for the first 50 or so games, and then he just kind of looked shot after the All-Star break, and that made things really tough. Jose Calderon was, like, shot immediately. Like, he played 600 minutes and, like, should have played, like, 200. It was insane. And, you know, nobody else – they kind of miss Ish Smith, but upgrading – I think Derrick Rose is a better player. They share a lot of the same weaknesses in that, like, they're not amazing three-point shooters, but Ish is a little bit shorter than Rose. Rose is more able to get, like, all the way to the basket and draw, like, foul attempts. He's a better mid-range shooter, I think, than Ish as well. And so, like, Derrick Rose is just functionally an upgrade on Ish. And so, like, I was fine with the move. Ish was a really good dude, though. I'm gonna miss Ish, and I hope he does well in Washington.
Yeah, I think the only name that you kind of miss for me is Wayne Ellington if you miss the three-point shooting. But none of these guys, as we just said, are big losses.
Yeah, I think you just want to keep Ellington for that three-point shooting. Obviously, shooting is a premium in this league. But talking as a team, what's the biggest X factor for the Pistons? And it's not a specific player or health. What would it be?
I think it has to be their wing rotation. You know, they have Tony Snell. They have Svi Mykhailiuk, who they traded Reggie Bullock for last year, but was injured, and that's why he didn't play. A younger guy, I believe, is like a 22-year-old rookie, so he's not like 19, but he is a second-year player. And there's a hope that, you know, he can fill up some of those backup wing minutes. There's, you know, I already talked a little bit about Sekou and how I don't think he's quite ready yet, but, you know, maybe if he develops rapidly, maybe he's ready in time to play by like a February or a March or something and impact the game in small ways in that manner. But yeah, the wing rotation for the Pistons last year was just so not great that we really need to see how if the moves that they made to upgrade those are actually upgrades and like what that does for the rest of the team.
Yeah, my X factor is just better playmaking. Obviously, Blake Griffin is a point forward in a lot of aspects. But when he went down, there was obviously issues. And Derrick Rose can get kind of tunnel vision-ish and just look for his own offense. Reggie Jackson is solid, but I just think playmaking is going to be a big element for this Pistons team.
Yeah, I just kind of similar to what you guys went with. I went with relief for Blake Griffin. You know, obviously offensively, playmaking wise, just making his life easier. And like we talked about earlier, making sure he's fresh for the playoffs so the Pistons can actually compete in a 7-game series. But what's going to be the starting lineup on opening night?
So there are four starters that are pretty much set. Reggie Jackson, Tony Snell, Blake Griffin, and Andre Drummond. The shooting guard spot is kind of an open question right now. It looks like it's going to be Bruce Brown, the second-year player out of Miami. He was one of the most effective on-ball defenders in the NBA last year, but he's just not a very good offensive player at this point in his career. The hope is that, well, he wasn't very good last year. The hope is that he's improved enough to be somewhat of an offensive threat this year. Or the alternative is Luke Kennard, obviously the guy they took in the lottery 3 years ago, shooting guard out of Duke. Really good shooter, really good with the ball in his hands as a pick and roll creator, but he can't get all the way to the basket, and that's an issue. He also tends to kind of drift into the background when he's playing with the starting lineup. He tends to kind of float if he's not getting the ball enough, and it's difficult to do that when he's in the starting lineup next to Reggie, Blake, and Dre. And so it looks like he's going to come off the bench. The coaching staff has kind of indicated that he's going to come off the bench and play like a super sub sixth or seventh man for the Pistons. But there's a lot of frustration around that because, you know, they took this guy 12th, you know, one pick before Donovan Mitchell, and like it's year three and he's not starting, right? That's a little bit of a disappointment, but he's still a really good player. No one is doubting that he's really good. People are just kind of frustrated that he's not in the role that you would imagine he would be in.
I think Donovan Mitchell frustrated a lot of teams, so I think that kind of adds, you know.
Yeah, ask Charlotte if they would rather have Mitchell or Monk.
I went with basically the same starting five, even though you made me want to change my mind on Kennard, but I have Kennard as my starting shooting guard as of right now.
Yeah, I had Kennard as well, but I do remember Brown starting a lot of last year. I remember him really being somewhat of an annoying defender for, you know, the opposing team. So, I mean, I could see it going either way with those two. It's kind of up to the coaching staff. Do we want to go with, you know, more offense with Luke, or do we want to go with more defense with Brown? So that's kind of the decision they'll be looking at. But player to watch next season?
The guy I've been saying repeatedly is Svi Mykhailiuk. Svi was a guy who shot 40%. From three, I think all four, no. He shot like 38% or better from three all 4 years in college. And he's 6'8". He can play make. He can create in the pick and roll. He has like really nice pocket passes. And if you give him space, he can take off with 2 feet and make plays. He's a knockdown shooter. The thing is he has to stay healthy and the shots he takes have to go in. My prediction is that he plays like 1,500 minutes in a really big role for this team. But he's going to have to beat out a bunch of other guys on the roster, like for those backup wing minutes in order to do so. But I think he'll do it. And if he does, like having another 6'8 guy who's just a really big floor spacer and threat from outside kind of opens up the floor for the rest of the bench lineups, and like that enables you to do things like play Blake fewer minutes because the bench is just like so effective offensively, right?
Exactly. I mean, I think anytime you can get a spacer, anytime you can get a wing that can shoot the three, it's just exactly what you want in the NBA.
Player to watch for me is Derrick Rose, which is kind of painful because I think I got in like two or three Twitter fights with Rose Danes this summer, which is, as you guys know, like just a volatile fan group.
I actually didn't really know about the Rose stands until he joined the Pistons, and they are legion, man. There's a lot of Rose stands.
Yeah, they ride or die for Derrick Rose.
Wait, what was the argument you got with this year? Someone said like Derrick Rose is better than Mike.
I said Mike Conley is better than Derrick Rose, and Derrick Rose fans were like, no, you gotta be kidding me. It's just like, what? Like, I don't know, Lass, how do you feel, Conley or Rose?
No, I mean like Conley pretty easily,
but
like
I thought, but apparently not.
Yeah, I mean, like, I got Derrick Rose stands, like, telling me he deserves to start day one over Reggie Jackson. And it's like, well, like, they quite literally signed him to play behind Reggie Jackson, and he's making less money, and he played fewer games, and he was, like, not as good as Reggie last year. So, like, what do you guys, like, I don't know what you guys see. And they're like, no, he's the MVP. Yeah. All right, man, sure.
He just had an opportunity. That's what they always say.
Yeah. The right situation is all he needs. Everyone keeps giving up on him. But it's Derrick Rose to watch. You know, even still, the guy did average 18 points per game last year, did shoot, you know, 48% from the field and a career best 37% from three. You know, it could be a fluke from three, but you're hoping that it's not. And obviously there is some playmaking there too with 4.3 assists per game. Obviously we know Rose is not a very good defender at this point in his career, but if he can provide offense and just kind of give Dwayne Casey at least some confidence that he can sit Blake Griffin on the bench and get some sort of offense on the court without Griffin, then that's a plus. And I think Rose can possibly be that guy.
Both great picks. I was going to go with Luke Kennard, but I was thinking about it. I think I'm going to go with Reggie Jackson here. You know, Laz mentioned how he got healthy probably in February. The big thing for Reggie Jackson, essentially since he's been traded to Detroit, can he be healthy? So if he's able to maintain his health, I think it just changes the dynamic for this team, having him actually effective on the floor. But what's worst case scenario for the Pistons as a team?
Oh, man, the worst case scenario is like pretty bad, actually. You know, Andre Drummond and Reggie Jackson are functionally expiring contracts. Andre has a player option, but he's already like come out and said he's going to be a free agent next year. So we're treating him like he's going to be a free agent next year. And so like if, say, Blake gets hurt relatively early in the season, and despite all the additions that they made this year, the team like kind of doesn't go anywhere. It's very easy to see a situation in which the team like trades Reggie, trades Andre, and just kind of tells Blake like, hey, like when you get healthy, like we'll get you out of here too. Like, don't worry. But like in the meantime, can you like help us win some games in like March? And he's like, I guess that would, and like that would be a really like unfortunate and like ignominious end to the big three like era of those guys in Detroit. But like it's definitely on the table. And so you'd win like, I don't know, like 35 games or something.
I just love how you said, I guess, and I just like can imagine Blake Griffin saying that too.
Yeah, I guess, guys. I mean, why not?
Like, I can't go anywhere. Like, making $34 million.
Sold my contract, so I guess. Yeah, so I think worst case scenario would be obviously injuries hit this team. You know, a couple guys in particular, Rose, Griffin, Jackson, all have an injury history. Obviously, Jackson and Griffin both having relatively healthy years last year for the most part. Especially Jackson playing in all 82 games with the knee tendonitis, which is a bitch. But for me, it'd be health. You know, this team gets hammered by injuries. They just can't seem to get anywhere, and they end up being just outside the playoffs in the East.
Yeah, I think that's probably like the worst spot too, is maybe even if like a worst case scenario would be like if they're kind of competitive and they just miss the playoffs at the end and they're dealing with injury, because now it's like the direction of the team is kind of almost unknown. Are we going to continue with this group, or maybe it's time to kind of break it up? So I think it'd just be like a season where you almost don't really find out any more about this team, and it's just kind of ruined by health, like Corey mentioned. But best case scenario?
The best case scenario is that everybody stays healthy. All the additions they make are improvements over the guys that they were replacing. Guys like Svi Mykhailiuk and Luke Kennard like take the next step forward in their careers, and the Pistons have like three or four guys who shoot 40% from three on their team. and this team wins somewhere like 48, 49 games and grabs like the fifth or sixth seed and like plays another team that they can beat in the first round of the playoffs. They manage to get a playoff spot that's high enough that they can avoid basically Milwaukee and Philadelphia and, you know, advance in the first round.
Yeah, I think best case scenario is home court advantage. I think that's the four seed. I think the three seed will be either the Pacers, Celtics. But I think there's an easy route, not an easy route, but there's a route where Detroit does get a home court advantage. Obviously, Derrick Rose, maybe he's MVP again. And, you know, most fans are just up and at him, up in arms. Yeah,
he's sixth man. He's sixth man. Let's make it realistic.
Sixth man of the year. Yeah. Blake Griffin's MVP. That's right. But yeah, I think that's the best case scenario is this team gets home court and maybe they even sneak into the second round.
Yeah, I would be the same thing as you guys. A fourth or fifth seed, second round exit, you know, like Laz mentioned, they get a matchup that they could win in that first round, one of just non-powerhouses. Because I think, you know, there's a couple areas where maybe Detroit could win a matchup because they're playing two bigs, and a guy like Blake is just a tough matchup for a lot of teams. But what's your actual prediction for the season, and where do they finish in the division?
So I have them right now, I think, at 43 wins and at the seventh seed in the division. That makes me a little bit sad because 43 wins is like, I think, where basically where they were headed last year until Blake got hurt. And so it's not really like an improvement over last year. But the hope is that they find time to rest Blake more often. Guys play a little bit better and that they're able to win games when Blake doesn't play, which would be a nice improvement. The seventh seed would also be kind of unfortunate because they would draw one of Philly or Milwaukee. Facing Milwaukee again in the seventh seed would just be like really tragic after everything that's happened. But like if Blake was healthy, I do think you could take a game or two off of Milwaukee.
So I actually went with one game higher. I went with 44 wins. And then getting the seventh seed and finishing third in the division behind the Bucks and Pacers.
Yeah, I went with 42 wins, third in division, you know, seventh or eighth seed, getting one of those tough first-round matchups and knocked out. But any other topics you guys want to touch on in terms of the Pistons before we get to League Pass?
We didn't really talk about Andre Drummond much, and he will be the marquee free agent in 2020. And so the big question is like how he looks this season. This is functionally a contract year for him. He's really excited. He's been a 15 and 15 guy. If he can excise a lot of the stuff that makes his game less efficient and just like be the really effective rim runner and rebounder and like pretty good passer and decision maker that he's shown flashes of being, like it's going to be really his market. What he's going to get paid this offseason is going to be really interesting. I don't think anyone would max him. And like even one of his potential suitors, Toronto, just extended Kyle Lowry, which cuts into their cap space for next year. So I don't even know if Toronto can max him anymore. But, you know, Pistons fans are really fearful that they're going to max Andre. And, you know, but you know, he'd be a really useful piece for a lot of teams around the NBA. It's just like an open question of who's going to have the cap space to pay him.
Yeah, I mean, Drummond's a beast. I mean, 5 years in a row, he's led the league in rebounding, which I don't think a lot of people realize is that this guy's an absolute, like, 17 and 15 easily.
I think, like, especially in a contract year, he's just going to ball out. Because I know at times it's been kind of like, where's the aggression or the energy or the engagement for Drummond? And if there's a different type of motivation, you know, obviously you should be motivated all the time. But, hey, money talks. And I think Toronto actually still will have max cap space because they got Serge and Marc Gasol coming off the book. So, I mean, it's kind of crazy to think he'll be the top free agent, but that could lead to him getting a lot of money, especially if he has a big year. And then also, you know, if the Pistons have some success with two, I think that just adds more value to his contract.
And yeah, I respect definitely. Him taking threes. I know last night, like, he got ridiculed on Twitter for the rough three attempt, but I respect him taking the wide open look. Like, he got it in today's
game. That was rough.
That was rough, but this is the thing that like is so funny about Andre, right? Like everybody sees the three that like clanks off the side of the backboard, like it gets picked up by like Worldwide Wob and like everyone laughs and stuff. But like Vooch fouled out in 20 minutes in three quarters of preseason basketball because he couldn't guard Dre. Like but that does not get clipped, right? Like that doesn't get highlighted. So it's like the stuff that Andre like doesn't do well is just like so visible and so dumb. And you're like, what is this guy doing? But like when he plays really well and he's really effective, It's on a like a smaller scale and it doesn't get noticed as much.
Yeah,
but like it's but like really 17 true. And 15 is hard to ignore, right?
Yeah.
It's like because you think of Drummond like headlines from last year, it's like the feud with Embiid. You don't really think about any of his big moments. It's all kind of negative things, but he's been a good player for them for a while now.
He quite literally saved their season in that Memphis game. I will never forget that. He was for like 8 minutes, he was legitimately unstoppable. You know, granted, it was, and that's the thing people will always say, like, it was against Memphis. He should have been better. Like, they should have been winning anyway, blah, 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 blah. But, like, no, but, like, for those 8 minutes, he looked like a top 10 player in the NBA. And, like, that's always the tantalizing thing about Drummond is that he has that potential. He just, you don't see that on an 82 game basis. It's hard for guys to do that.
Especially when you're that big, too. It just takes a lot of energy to move around. But league pass-wise, where would you rate the Pistons 1 through 10?
If I'm being honest, I would give them, like, a 5 or a 6. Blake Griffin is fun to watch, but, like, you're not going to get, like, the insane dunks or anything. You're not going to get, like, this team doesn't really play up and down in transition. They win because they're, like, a pretty good defensive team and a really good rebounding team with Andre Drummond and because they take and make a lot of threes. And so, like, this team is not – excuse me, this team is not like particularly fun to watch, but you know, they'll win. George and Greg, the announcers, George Blaha and Greg Kelser are fun. Like, they're local legends in Detroit. You get to see our owner occasionally come to the game and like throw t-shirts in the stands, and like he just loves throwing t-shirts, man. Like, Tom Gore just loves throwing t-shirts to people. sometimes you'll see like Bruce Brown makes like really funny faces. Like, he almost swung on Dario Saric last year. Like, that was hilarious. So little random stuff comes up, but like, yeah, they're not like I saw the Pelicans Hawks game last night. Like, I saw Zion. Like, yeah, I would go rather, like, I would watch that. I totally understand.
I went with a 4. You know, there's entertaining nights for sure with Blake Griffin and Derrick Rose on the roster. But more nights than not, there's going to be other teams that I'm more interested to watch. And also, like, being a Pacers fan, like, the Pistons, like, I'm just not over certain moments in time of, like, Reggie Miller getting blocked. You know, I'm still not over it.
Yeah, and you never will be, and that's fine.
Nope. You're damn right. That's my childhood.
Ruined. I went with a 5 year, you know, like you guys said, the Pistons just aren't a crazy team to watch. There's not a ton of excitement. And like you mentioned, Blake not having the big dunks. Like, now if you're going to see a highlight play from Blake, it might be a crazy pass or something like that, or just like dropping threes. It's so crazy how his game has changed so much over the years. But in terms of a TV show comparison, now, Laz, this can be based off of watchability or based off the show's plot. What would you compare to the Pistons?
So I would compare the Pistons to The Good Place. Where like these, so they're in The Good Place, and like, hey, this is good. And then like, wait, weird stuff keeps happening. And they're like, wait, this is The Bad Place. And it's like, oh no, like, we're in The Bad Place. This is terrible. But they make it through. They make a good situation like out of The Bad Place. And like, that's basically what the Pistons have been doing for like the last decade, like making the best out of like being in The Bad Place. And so that's my answer.
I like it.
So I went with more watchability. I went with Criminal Minds. Like, it's a good show. Like, you can watch it. You can be entertained. There's certain episodes that are more fun than others, like Blake Griffin dropping 50 or Derrick Rose going to be dropping 45. And they're steady. Like, it's not going to show that's going to win any flashy awards, but they're not going to be, you know, disregarded or shunned. So it's, you know, right in the middle TV show.
Yeah, I went with watchability, also like somewhat plot. I went Ash versus the Evil Dead, you know. Not a great show, but I'll definitely watch it. And then main character Ash, similar to Blake Griffin, kind of does all the work. Same thing in Detroit. So, but guys, pleasure hopping on with you two, talking Pistons.
I like the implication that like Derrick Rose is a zombie. That's funny.
Laz, give yourself one more shout out. Same for you, Corey.
Sure. So you can follow me on Twitter at Laz Chance. That's at LazChance. I'm an editor at Detroit Bad Boys, which is the SB Nation blog site for the Detroit Pistons. You should definitely hit up Detroit Bad Boys. We're doing our like mini player preview series right now. And I also host the podcast, the Detroit Bad Boys podcast. I host another podcast called Pistons versus Everybody for Blue Wire. That is another, it's an NBA focused podcast, but like more about the Pistons. The Pistons don't really get a lot of love nationally. Corey knows what I'm talking about. And so it's more of a, it's an NBA podcast that features the Pistons more than other NBA podcasts would.
That makes Pistons Division gets very little love.
Yeah, definitely.
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at KWAL Hoops, KWAL Hoops. You can also check out my podcast, Full Access Hoops, another OTG basketball podcast.
And obviously you can follow Off the Glass on Twitter at OTG Basketball. Head to the website, otgbasketball.com. And like I mentioned earlier, check out previous shows, iTunes, Block Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, Google Play, Dash Radio, and YouTube.
Peace out. You're really good at getting all those out.